Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi and welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my audio diary through the wonderful world of photography. It's the 9th of July 2013. It's episode 222, and it's time to talk photography. What have I been up to this week? Well, actually over the last month, because I think it's that long since I recorded the last podcast. A couple of little things I've been playing around with. A short review of our last photo assignment, and then a new photo assignment for the next few months to keep us busy over the summer. Well, why haven't you been recording podcasts? I hear you shout at your iPods and MP3 players and computers. Again, the usual excuse, I'm afraid, been really busy at work and at home. 6 days a week at the moment at work, and then obviously things to do at night. Especially doing lots of walks to try and keep fit, to try and lose some of this weight I've put on over the last few years after giving up smoking. But what I have been quite lucky in is being able to cover at a few other Southampton, a few other machine work stores, excuse me, got a little bit of wind. Pardon me. Cover a few other machine work stores, and that has enabled me to go out for some quick photo walks before work if I got there and the traffic hadn't been too bad. And luckily, again, I've covered at Southampton a few times, and the traffic's been really clear on the M27, so I've got there in time to have a quick half an hour photo walk. You might have seen some of these photos on my Flickr photo stream already, but there was one where they're building this new high-rise building on the way into Southampton when you come off the motorway at Eastleigh, on this quite busy junction, and I thought, well, I've got to go down there and take some photos. So, you know, I got there and it just happened to be a little bit early, so I threw my camera on, marched up to where this building is, and luckily, kind of opposite the building, there's a footbridge, so I set myself up on there, put the 55-250 on and started snapping away, looking for angles and stuff like that. Funnily enough, although it was only about 8 o'clock in the morning, the crane driver had already started work, and I'll put this photo in the show notes over on robnunphoto.com. As the crane kind of moved round and I zoomed in on the little cab underneath this massive crane, you can see him giving me the V sign. So, you know, being the friendly photographer I am, I waved back at him, gave him another two-fingered salute, and then just proceeded to take some more photos, and then wandered back and got some interesting photos. I mean, a lot of the time with photography, it's all about staying sharp, isn't it? It's all about staying frosty, and if you can shoot whenever you can, that really helps. Got some nice kind of, they're not street photography, because they're not photos with people in them, but the photos of, I guess they're architecture photos of different buildings out around that area of Southampton. And then, funnily enough, about a week later, I went to cover at Southampton again and got there a bit earlier again. And I went down this way I've been before, because there's this other tower block that's been covered in scaffolding for a long time, and I thought, well, I'm going to go down there and take some photos of it. But instead of going right to this playing field here, I thought, no, I'll just go left. I don't know what was down there, just went left. Took some other pictures of this building, which turned out to be part of the university that's kind of been shut down, this tall building. Went round the corner, there's a sign for St Mary's Church. Went down this little lane, and lo and behold, there's this really old, I guess it's a Victorian, probably a lot earlier, church with this great graveyard and headstones, really nice. place just to take some photos in the morning, which I proceeded to do. And I'll put those photos in my Flickr photo stream as well. Probably won't be on the show notes, because although I've edited them, I haven't uploaded them yet. And it kind of just shows you, just by, I didn't know it was there, but just by thinking, now I'm not going to go the way I've been before, I'm just going to walk a different way. Went down there and came across a really interesting place to take some photos. As I said earlier, I've been doing a lot of these evening walks with Suzanne and Oliver, just trying to get myself a little bit fitter, just to lose a little bit of this excess poundage that I've managed to put on. My aim really is to really get down to something like a 34 inch waist with the old trousers. I'm currently at about 40 inches, which I think is pretty fat. And if I put my weight into one of those BMI body mass indicator type websites, it turns out that I think I'm morbidly obese or something like that. So I need to lose some of this weight and get fitter. So just by going out and walking a lot, I'm getting myself a little bit fitter, so that I can start moving into doing something a bit more vigorous, like going out on the bike more often. Maybe doing a bit of jogging. So that's been great, going down the beach with Oles and Suzanne, taking plenty of photos. Had a good weekend at the car boots. Saturday I had off and went to one, I think it's called 100 Acres or Strawberry Fields. It's up Haven Way. Very busy, fantastic weather, so incredibly hot in the UK at the moment. And picked up an Instax Mini for about £3, I think it was, although one of the batteries had leaked inside the battery compartment, so I thought for £3 I'd give it a punch. Got it home, stripped the batteries out, cleaned up the terminals, put some fresh batteries in, and it seems okay. What I'll probably do is hang on to that one and sell my other Instax Mini, because it's in a box, maybe with some film in it as well, and start getting a kind of fighting fund towards my new DSLR body, which I need to buy sort of maybe the end of the year or next year, because as I've been talking about for quite a long time, the 350D is getting a little bit long in the tooth, and the things like the display inside the viewfinder doesn't work anymore. The autofocus can be a little bit, it seems to take a little bit longer than it used to focus on things, so I'm thinking maybe it hasn't got that much life left in it. But anyway, you know, I thought if I can get towards near my targets for losing weight, my reward to myself will be a new digital SLR camera body. But even though I'll be buying a new digital DSLR camera body, still on the lookout for film cameras. And on Sunday at the car boot sale in Titchfield, I managed to pick up a camera that you'll probably recognise the name of if you listen to the Film Photography Podcast. Picked up a Pentax K1000. Now, on this particular little car boot sale, came across an Olympus OM1 to start off with. The guy wanted a tenner for. It looked a little bit dirty. Didn't look mint or anything. And I know £10 is nothing, but I'm kind of on a bit of a budget as usual, so I thought, no, I won't get it straight away. Plus the fact that I've got a mint OMN2, which is like the successor to the OM1. So I thought, now I'll have a look around first. And lo and behold, there's one of these little aluminium, almost like mini Pelican briefcases with aluminium outside, or aluminium outside. Had a look inside, and there was this K1000 with an Olympus XA2, which I've already got, which is like a little rangefinder camera, and a few little bits of old film and straps. I said to the guy, how much do you want for it? And he said, £20 for the lot. And I'm like, you know, it's a bit expensive, because the problem with these old camera bags, sorry, aluminium suitcase type things, is often the foam inside is gone off, kind of, it's all starts to go crumbly, and it falls bits in there, so I didn't really want it. So I said, well, look, how much just for the camera? And he said, a tenner. So I had a quick fiddle around with it, checked that the apertures worked, the shutter fired, put it on like bulb mode, and it stayed open, put it on a second, and it seemed to last a second, went up to a thousandth of a second, and everything seemed fine, no mould on the glass, you know, also, it all seemed to be in good working order, and pretty clean as well. So I gave the guy his tenner, and was pretty chuffed. Did a little bit of research in the K1000, and had a play with it, and one thing that really stands out straight away about the K1000 is the fact that it's a fully manual camera that requires no batteries to work at all, which is brilliant, because I love cameras like that, old cameras like that. And what that means is, just like the SRT 101, the old Minolta I've got, It just uses a little black button cell battery to work the light meter. Everything else is just clockwork, you know, so you do not need a battery to work it. You know, when you cock the shutter, it kind of spring loads everything, so when you fire the shutter release, everything just works. And it came with a nice 50mm 1.7 lens, I think, on it. So I'm really looking forward to playing around with that one and seeing what I can come up with, because it's just always a pleasure to come across a nice manual camera that doesn't need batteries. And I know it sounds a bit odd to talk about them, but the problem is when you buy some of these other cameras, even like the little compacts which I've been reviewing on YouTube, is that if they don't use a battery like AA's or something like that, the battery you used to put in them could actually be quite a lot of money. It could be like £10, which is a lot more than the price of the camera. So to have fully manual ones is always a pleasure. Plus the fact that, you know, that a fully manual camera like a SRT 101, this K1000, the Olympus OM1, or things like Nikon F2s, that sort of stuff, they'll go on for a long, long time because there's very little electronics inside them. The electronics are basically related to the meters inside them, which if it breaks, it doesn't matter because the rest of the camera will still operate, no problemo. And anything mechanical that fails, it's probably fixable, you know. Whereas with cameras that have lots of electronics in, like, you know, the early Canon EOS film cameras, is that if the electronics go on them, you know, they're not really going to be fixable, because you can't fix printed circuit boards very easily. You know, you basically throw the camera away. So anyway, enough of me waffling on about a K1000. I suppose I should test it first and check it's okay, then get back to you then. What I've been playing with recently, actually, and there's a couple of photos on the photo stream, and I'll put them in the show notes, is doing reverse lens macro photography. Now, what's that, you say? I mean, look, quite a few of you probably know already, but one of the problems with DSLRs or SLRs is, you know, you have your lenses and they can be quite expensive, and you almost need like a different lens for different occasions. You know, you like, you have your wide angle, you have your super telephoto zooms for wildlife and sports, you have your 50mm or your 85mm for your portraits, and if you want to do macro, you know, you have to have another lens that's got a macro facility, which means that you can focus really close. Now, as I've talked about before, what you probably find is that your telephoto lens, if you zoom out to its maximum zoom, will probably work quite well as a basic macro. I know my 55-250 Canon lens does. So you zoom all the way out, so it's on maximum magnification, and then you'll find you can focus on things quite close, and they're pretty big. But after that, if you want to get even closer, you've either got to buy a dedicated lens or put a filter on the end and put extension tubes in between the camera and the lens and all these sorts of things. It's at least more things to have in your camera bag. But one of the things you can do is just take the lens off the camera and flip it around. Turn it around the wrong way. And then you've instantly got a macro lens. Now, you can buy little adapters, which basically have a little mount on them that snaps into the camera, then have a lens, or the reverse of a lens filter thread, so you can screw your lens on the wrong way onto your camera. Obviously, you're losing all your autofocus and your aperture controls. Now, the whole point, I think, of doing reverse lens macro is that you don't have to carry more kit with you, and so it's all about hand-holding it. Now, it might seem quite fiddly, but it isn't really, because on cameras like the Canon 350D I've got, or the Rebel XT, or your Nikons or Sonys or anything, there's probably like a little pop-up button that locks the lens in place on the bayonet mount. And what you can do is, if you hold your lens against that, it's pretty steady. And what I found was that what you can do is you start off with your camera around the right way on the lens around the right way on the camera, and you select the aperture you want to work at. It may well be wide open, which you don't really have to worry about, or you might want to, say, close it up a stop or two, or maybe go to f5.6 or something. And then what you do is you press the depth of field preview button on your camera, so boop, so that will close up the aperture. And then while you're pressing that, press the lens release button and take the lens off the camera. And what you should find is that it's broken the electrical contacts before the aperture's had a chance to close. So if you have a look at down the lens, you'll probably see the aperture is closed. Flip it around the wrong way, put it up against the camera. Now, you're probably going to be shooting in aperture priority mode or manual mode. If you shoot in aperture priority mode, the camera will then just look at the light that's coming through and adjust your shutter speed accordingly. Now, your depth of field will be really, really small, and you'll be going up pretty close to your object, so you need to be moving very carefully. Keep an eye on your shutter speed, make sure it doesn't go too low. If it starts dropping, bump up your ISO or put the camera back, put the lens back on the camera and open up the aperture and then flick it round again. Remember, the image stabilisation won't be working either on the lens because it's not connected electronically to the camera. And then just have a bit of a play. Now, what I found was that the lens of the two lenses I actually tried that was better was actually the longer zoom, the 55 to 250 set at 55 was probably the best option. What I found by when I put the 18 to 55 mil zoom on the little Canon DSLR was that you had to get too close to the subject. You were right up against it, but with the 55 to 250 set at 55, it seemed to be quite an easy distance to go, and I was fairly pleased with the results. Again, if your shutter speed is starting to get a little bit slow, you know, increase your ISO or use the flash as well. That's what I did a few times, just to pop that flash just to freeze the scene, and it seemed to work. Okay. So I'm not saying it's a fantastic way of doing macro photography, but it's kind of a down and dirty way where you can get away with macro photography. You know, getting really close for no extra money at all and just a little bit of practice. So, you know, have a go. And remember, with reverse lens macro photography, you don't have to use the lenses that are anything to do with your lens mount on your camera. You can lose any old lens and flip it around the wrong way and see what happens. But more about that in a minute. Another thing that I've been playing around with this week is red scale photography. I've been on a little bit of a crusade, if you like, to buy lots of little compact cameras and play around with them. And one of the things I tried to do is make them a little bit more interesting in terms of the fact that if you buy an old camera, for example, on YouTube, you'll probably see, if you look in my YouTube sort of stream, so I've just done a review of the Canon BF little compact 35mm film camera. And it's a great little camera, takes AA batteries, fully automatic, and takes competent pictures. But often, you know, you're not shooting film just to get competent pictures. You want a little bit more character, a little bit more emotion in them. So what I did was I took a black marker pen and drew a circle on the outside of the lens so it would vignette, and then put a blob of black marker over the electronic eye that worked out the exposure so it would overexpose the photos as well. And lo and behold, the photos I got back had nice saturated colours, were a little bit overexposed in the middle, and then had a nice vignette on the outside. So it was kind of lomo-fying, if you like, the camera, you know, making it worse to come out with different looking photos. Now, I know you could say, well, what's the point of doing that? You're ruining a perfectly good camera, and you could also do it in post-processing. But, you know, I'm kind of a bit of a believer in the fact that you should do as much as you can in camera. And, you know, if you want to play around with film, if you want to experiment with film, a lot of it is about something that's referred to as the happy mistake. You know, when you do something with your camera and you come up with a result that maybe you didn't plan for, but, you know, you did it and it's happened and it's chickity-boo. And so one of the other things you can do with film is actually run it through the camera backwards. Sounds a bit odd. So instead of having the light come through the film in the normal way, you actually take your film, attach it to another film canister that's spent, roll it into the other film canister the wrong way, so it's like the back of the film is being exposed to the light, and then go out and photograph, and overexpose it by a couple of stops, So, for example, if you're running, if you're using a 200 speed film, you'll run it at like ISO 50, because obviously one stop would be 100, another stop would be 50. And I did this with some film in an Olympus Trip 35, and I got the photos back a couple of nights ago. I've got to say, I got pretty mixed results. Some of the photos looked, you know, nice and red and interesting, and some of them were very dark and very underexposed. But I think what might have happened was that because I haven't used my Olympus Trip for quite a while, Olympus Trips are great little cameras. It's probably, next to the SRT 101, my favourite camera to shoot with in terms of film, because it's fully automatic in terms of exposure and doesn't need a battery. You know, my old thing about not needing batteries. But what you've got to make sure you do is, when you're using it and playing around with it and changing focus in distances, you don't knock the aperture ring from automatic onto an aperture ring, which I think I did. And a few of the shots were in this graveyard of this church, which was pretty dim. And I remember at the time thinking, gosh, I'm shooting at ISO 50 in this shade. I didn't really think the Trip would be able to do this with the aperture that it's got on, but it was taking the photos. But I think what happened was, as I was changing the focusing distance, I knocked the aperture ring from automatic to 2.8, and when you do that, the Trip will then just happily take lots of photos at a 40th of a second, and I think that's where the problem came. So what I'm probably going to do is roll another roll of red scale using a different film, not the Kodak stuff I used, and put it in a camera where it's less easy for me to make a mistake on it. Maybe even the K1000 and see what happens. Because, you know, it's an interesting effect. And it's kind of one of those styles of doing things along with, like, cross-processing. When you buy E6 slide film, then run it through a C41 film. Got to be careful in a way, in the fact that I'm getting my film developed at the local Asda now, because it's easy, and it's £5 to get it developed and 6x4 prints on it. You know, which is fairly reasonable, I guess, you know. But that's so every time I shoot a roll of film, it's a fibre, which kind of adds up fairly quickly. But I want to give it a go. So if you fancy giving it a go, just do a Google search for red scale, and you see how it's done. And it's very, very simple. The tricky thing can be if you're using a more modern camera that automatically detects the ISO of the film and shoots accordingly, because you have to overexpose the film to get through that the back of the film and actually get some photos. So most film SLRs, newer ones that automatically detect the speed of the film, you can override them. With compacts, though, often there isn't an override on newer compacts. You've really got to go to old film compacts to be able to do that. But you can override the DX encoding on film canisters by scratching out the foil and blanking out and doing things like that. But again, do the Google to do that. Don't put red scale film in your camera and shoot it at the normal film speed, because it will be incredibly underexposed. I got a question this week from JP, who was asking me about, what did he say? He said, I saw your video on using a projector screen as a backdrop for portrait shots. I came across it while trying to research the idea of a mobile screen as a gift for my father, who is a photographer. Unfortunately, it is not an interest I share with him, so I was wondering if you could answer a couple of quick questions. There is very little on the web about using a projector screen for this. The main question I have is about reflection. Does this cause a problem with a projector screen? It would be more reflective than the usual white sheets for backdrops, I guess. Are there any unwanted shadow effects? Any other downside to using such a screen in place of a regular white sheet and frame? I'd really appreciate it if you had an opportunity to respond. Well, JP, many thanks for the question. And I think projector screens make great backdrops if you want a really bright white background, because they're incredibly white and they're very reflective. Not like a mirror, you know, they're just very, very white. And what that means is that if you want a pure white background for that David Bailey or Avedon look, you have to light the background, normally with a strobe, with a flash. And because these are so reflective, you don't have to use much power to do it. And whenever you're using flashes or strobes, less power is always better, because the recycle time, the gap between the flash being able to take another shot, you want it as short as possible so it doesn't slow you down. And so they're very, very good for that. I guess if your flash was set too high, then you could have glare as a problem, with the flash bouncing back into the camera and causing flare and glare. But that can go for any backdrop at all, not just because it's a projector screen. So all you have to do to avoid that is just angle your flash when it's shining at the projector screen. So it's like at 45 degrees, so it's just going to hit the projector screen. Some's going to come back at your camera, but the main force of it, if you like, is firing off at an angle. As long as your subject is far enough away from the screen, and they don't have to be that far, you avoid any strange shadows and things like that. And in fact, I mean, for headshots or head and shoulder shots, projector screens are perfect. They come in like their own carrying case, and they've got their own stand, because they're all kind of integral, which means they stay nice and clean. But, you know, the downside is the fact that they are in their own metal carrying case and have got their own stand, so they're quite chunky things. And the size, obviously, is that, you know, you're limited to doing headshots or head and shoulder shots. You know, you've got to crop in nice and tight. Also, they're only really good for white backgrounds. You can darken things down by using, you know, less light on the screen and more light on the subject to tone it down to like a grey. But if you really want to do that, you're probably better off getting a traditional sort of cotton or muslin and backdrop and doing it that way. And I guess the final thing I'd say is, you know, I don't know whether it's worth buying like a projector screen off eBay and giving it to someone as a gift. A projector screen used by a photographer is more of a, look what I've found, I've given it a go, and does it make a great backdrop screen, rather than buying one for somebody. Because if you go on eBay, I mean, there's a little bit of quick research, you know, for £28 you can buy a white background with stands, you know, brand new, delivered to you. And for £48, you could get the stands that hold up a really big background, and it comes with a white background and a black background. I mean, that would be much more superior for doing like full body shots and group shots than a little projector screen would be. So I hope that answers your question, and if anybody else has got any questions, please send them in, because it really helps me with ideas for the podcast and the blog, to be honest, over on roblandphoto.com, and it keeps the episodes coming. Right, so what have we got next? The May-June assignment review. What good stuff going on over there. Superb. Remember, Flickr, if you haven't joined already, come on people, it's free. You now get 2 terabytes of photos that you can upload. 2 terabytes. I guarantee you will never fill 2 terabytes worth of photos, because it has to be JPEGs. I mean, that is enormous. Even if you only join just to back up your photographs, you can back them up for resolution, do it. It's free. Come on over to flickr.com. Register, join, and then find the roblandphoto.com group, join, and then you convert your photos into the group pool so we can all have a look at them, and you can take part in the assignments that, again, they're all for fun. They're just to give us ideas, so when you're out and about shooting, you might see something and go, ooh, that would make a good shot for the assignment, or you might go, you know, I've got 10 minutes, I'm going to get my camera and I'm going to go and shoot something. The last assignment was straight up and straight down. And there's some great work. James has done a lovely picture of some water. Looks like it's coming at this might be a waterfall, actually. Really good. Nice and soft. John Calidude has done like a light painting, which I guess is a LED or a laser pen spinning around. Beautiful, lovely blue. Tumos has done a nice upright photo up towards the sky of a looks like a stone building. Very nice. I like that. And then another one which is straight down looking into, he said it's a jetty, so that's very good. Tumos has done working with shadows. I like that. I always like shadows and bridges as well. One of my favourite things to take pictures of, bridges. Rod Payne, a lovely picture of a bird in a tree. Danny B, nice reflection. Which he said, you know, straight up, straight down, because you've got the trees going straight up and coming back down. and one of a toilet, which is quite funny. Tumos has done one from a long way up. It looks like it's taken from an aeroplane, but he says it's from the visitor platform on top of the 115 metre high ancient gas meter in Oberhausen, Germany. Great shot. And then Spotmatics has done one looking up a, I think that's a concrete machine. It's like a, or a crane of some sort. Very good. Well, hopefully the idea of it was just to get you thinking about different perspectives other than, you know, looking straight out, you know, in parallel with the ground. You know, really think about looking up, looking down, looking all around, to borrow a phrase from Scott Bourne. Luddered, I think he calls it. And some of the best photos you'll take are the ones that you take when you stop and turn around from when you're walking away from a subject. So, new assignment. Now this one is going to be for 3 months. It's going to be for July, August and September. Because we're already into, what is it, is it the 9th of July at the moment, is it? Yes, the 9th of July. So, this is going to be a long one. But it's also quite an open topic. And the assignment is free lensing. What that means is, you can, the idea is that you've got your camera, and you've got your lens, and they can't be connected in the standard way. So they can't be snapped in on your bayonet mount. They can't be screwed in if it's an M42. The lens must be free of the body. Now you can press it up against the mount, but you can't snap it in. So you could do reverse macro, take that lens off, flip it round. One of the most interesting things you can do is you can turn any lens into almost like a lens baby by take your lens off, press it back up against the mount, look through the camera, and then tilt it up and tilt it down. And you'll kind of, nothing will be focused to start off with, but you play around with the manual focus and everything, and you'll get massive areas of the scene which are blurred, and then you get some that are sharp, because what you're doing is you're effectively turning your lens into a tilt shift. Now, it can be quite tricky with kit lenses that have small apertures. If you've got like a 51.8 or something, put that on and it'll be much easier. But remember, because the lens isn't fixed to the camera, you can use any lens from your collection with it. Anything at all, you can flip around. Hell, you don't even have to use lenses. Use something like, I don't know, the bottom of a glass, the bottom of an ashtray. Maybe try just putting a UV filter in front of it. Play around with how far away the lens is from the camera, the angle, the tilting, the shifting. Try different lenses. You know, try things that aren't lenses. Now, if you haven't got an SLR or DSLR and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, the lens on my camera is fixed, you know, I can't take it off, no worries. Do the same thing. Put a piece of glass in front of that lens. Put a filter in front, but don't put up the lens, and then do it at a funny angle. Maybe you've got some close-up lenses. Put them on. Flip them around the wrong way. Put them at an angle. Shoot through something else to distort your field of view. Because, oh, one more thing. Obviously, practically, you're going to be probably shooting in aperture priority mode when you do this, and the camera, or manual mode, and the camera will, in aperture priority mode, the camera will look after the exposure. In manual mode, you've got to. But what we're trying to do is get us away from the from us getting too obsessed by the fact that the camera and the lens are these objects that produce the photographs. You know, it's us that produce the photographs, and it's up to us how we can use these pieces of equipment, these objects, these little machines. So let's play around them. Let's see what we can do. Let's look for, remember, those two things that I talk about an awful lot, which is photographer's luck, which means if you want to take a great photograph, take lots of photos, and then chances are some of them will be good. And then there's this other phrase, which I've started saying recently, actually, which I think is very true, which is the happy mistake, which is when you try something new and something happens that you didn't expect, but, you know, hell, it's happened and it's a great photo and it'll really appeal to you. So there you go, free lensing, July, August, September. I'll put up a do a Google search on it to get more ideas, but I'll put up a new thread in the Flickr photo group soon, and just have a play around. Well, that's it for SEL 222. Thanks to everybody for posting in the Flickr group, putting their photos in there, or putting comments on robinphoto.com. Thanks to everybody who's done a review over on iTunes of the SEL Photography Podcast, or, you know, if you any other podcast aggregator that you use. I know there's loads out there. If you can do a review on SEL, please do. I really enjoy it. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download at everydayjones.com. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to download and listening to my podcast. My name's Rob from robnumphoto.com. Remember, you can email me scalespeeder@gmail.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.